I'm getting worried about James since he's become a student, Brian.
It sounds like there's something to be worried about, James. What's got you so hot under the collar today?
I'm just running behind on everything now. I was not prepared for the earlier. I had everything scheduled, you American bastard, and your damn
Yeah.
time zone
It's
changes.
funny you should say
And
this because Kerry was telling me over the weekend, I know it's daylight savings time, it's daylight savings time, and yesterday she's going, the clock's changed tonight, the clock's changed tonight. I said, Kerry, the clocks never change on a Sunday. What are you talking about? Have you been talking to Americans or something? Not sort of like clicking on that would affect Brian until I saw on Facebook this morning that it was indeed daylight savings time in the United States. And I thought, oh shit, which is when I sent that message, the initial message.
oh
yeah,
dear.
and naturally, it's the one thing everybody kept saying to me too, daylight savings time and so on. It just, nothing clicked that it would affect anything in the morning, Still can't get used to that because they changed ours. If you remember a couple of years ago, we used to be on your schedule. And they changed it a couple of years ago. I think they were trying to extend the daylight. What was it? They were trying
Extend
to
the
give us
daylight.
longer days for a little bit longer, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's nice. But it does kind of screw with things a bit.
Indeed. So you are listening, dear listener, to kind of slightly timey-wimey, really, because we're talking about daylight savings time, which isn't without its kind of its time travel aspects to it. How are you guys?
Jolly.
Jolly, jolly. That's
Yeah.
jolly good. And James?
Yeah, I don't even know what's going on. Are you talking? I
I
mean,
am
obviously you
talking.
are
Yeah, I'm
talking.
talking to our listener right now.
I know, but is the listener been listening before I started listening, or have you
No,
been talking
no, no,
before I
no.
started talking to?
Basically, I started with a daylight savings time conversation.
Right, I
That's
see.
when we started the podcast then.
I
It's all right
see.
because Brian didn't know either. It's kind of a surprise for
No.
everyone. I
Yes,
mean,
it was
let's
a big
face it,
surprise.
the
I'm
listener
sure it's
didn't
going
know
to be
either.
riveting to listen to as well.
I think you're probably right. Listen, I've got a few things I want to talk about this week, and then we've got an interview in the partway through the show with Kenton Hall, who's an actor, writer, and director who has put together an independent movie. I've had a look at the trailer. The trailer's quite stunning, actually, for an indie movie. It's a bit of a comedy, it's a little bit fantasy, and Colin Baker is in it, which is why we're having a chat with him. And he's a Sixth Doctor fan, Kenton, as well, which is admirable and unusual, I'm sure you'll agree.
Sorry.
In equal positive measures, James McLean.
I think it's sad that it's the one doctor you've got to say is
It's it. No,
unusual
you're
and
absolutely right. You are absolutely right. And there does need to be a serious reappraisal. But we haven't got time for that reappraisal today, unfortunately. But perhaps we will, one other time. There's a couple of things going on, Brian. You are a very helpful chap to me, as in your guise as associate editor of Casterbridge, which basically means you don't do anything
Yes.
except give me really good ideas or tell me when my ideas are rubbish.
Yes, it's a good job for me.
It is, yeah. But one of the things that you do is forward me emails from Titan Comics.
Yes.
Yeah, and over the last sort of 5 or 6 days, I think there's been on one subject. This is just on one topic. There's been a dozen emails.
I was going to guess a dozen, because that seemed excessive, but yeah.
Yeah. So what Titan are doing? They are their Ninth Doctor miniseries by Cavan Scott. It launches. I think it's later this month or next month. I forget at the moment. But it's coming with a selection of variant covers. Now, variant covers for a launch issue isn't unusual. It's a good way for to keep sales up and to make an event and lots of other things along those kind of lines, basically to so people know that it's coming. Usually you get three or four, two or three to three or four. With the Ninth Doctor series, Titan are well, we thought there was going to be nine, didn't we? Because it's the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah, but that was our guess.
That was our guess. We were
Maybe our hope as well for the emails to stop.
Well, after the sixth one, it was definitely our hope. But
Yeah.
so far, there are 12 variant covers for the first issue of the Ninth Doctor comics from Titan. James, you're our resident comic expert. This seem
No, I'm
excessive
not.
to you? You are now.
Well, I don't buy comics, so I don't really know. No, I don't, but Yeah, it is a bit of a high marketing ploy. You could almost have one per episode of his, couldn't you?
You could. Well, what I was thinking as well, there's so many variants. There's almost as many there's more variants than there are variant Ninth Doctors.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, it's a crazy
good
thing.
On you managing to spin an excessively anal geeky Who comment on that.
Well, this is the podcast.
Almost as many covers as there are alternate Ninth Doctors. In case you didn't know, there's a few of them. You're gonna list them?
No, I'll let you do that.
I can do that. I don't know them. yeah. Rich D. Grant, I guess. He was the ninth, wasn't he?
Yeah, for Rich D. Grant and Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson. Is there any more? Was there an nth? No, we don't just count the nth Doctor, do we?
No, don't count that. No.
No. Anyone else?
Signifies nth.
So there's two.
Yeah, so there's three in total.
So there's three. So you've made a comparative saying there is more covers than there is ninth Doctors. Yeah, you could have said that for virtually any comic series launch, which will have three to four covers.
Except this one, which has got 12.
This one's got 12.
Yeah.
That's you could be spending like £20, couldn't you?
More than that.
On collecting all the same story over and over again.
The 265 from Forbidden Planets, if you've got them in the UK, yeah, you're looking at £40-50.
I wonder when the war cover variant is going to come out, actually.
The War Doctor cover variant.
No, just the War cover variant, because we have 1 through 12, so we need the number War to be in there as well,
which, of course,
comes
number
after
war.
The fact, after we've all learned basic math.
Yeah. Well done. You have managed to compete with Christian for
thank you.
Ridiculous geeky.
Brilliant, Brian. I think we found the level of this podcast, career. Even
thank
if
you.
James hasn't.
No.
Come on, James.
I'm going to try. I'm going to try and do them. now, who does it start with? You've got William Hartnell. Then Colin Baker comes up sometime soon after that. He's the favourite of a director of some kind. he must be in the second. Patrick Troughton's occurred a couple of times, I think. Patrick Troughton, Sylvester McCoy, Matt Smith. Let's just call them Patrick Troughton. No, I can't remember the rest.
Okay, right. Well, let's carry on, and maybe James's memory upload will continue. Because in case you didn't actually realise, James is actually a cybernetic organism. And he seems to be having some sort of reboot issue at the moment.
I thought I was a cybernetic orgasm then. Which I thought, wow. What social connotations has that got?
Let's not go into that. Stephen Moffat has been chatting in Doctor Who magazine. You may have seen. You may have read. I've read. I do it basically so you don't have to, dear listener. And fear for me. And that might be joking. Nothing wrong with Doctor Who magazine. And
as do majority of sites these days, you don't have to read Doctor Who magazine. There's just like a thousand sites just tell you what it says each month, including us.
Yeah, but we do it with a bit of style. We at least remind people that it's out and that they can still buy it.
Trevor Martin, he was another one.
Trevor Martin.
Yeah, he was like fifth Doctor or something.
No, the stage Doctor. I was thinking of Philip Martin, the writer director.
Oh, he was the third Doctor. I'd love to somehow be able to have the power. If I had the power and the money, all the money in the world, I'd do such pointlessly superficial things like try and subvert internet Who culture by using money to try and subvert people's beliefs into there being other doctors or that there's doctors that are wrong. You know, I'd do things like that, or I'd park cars down one street just to piss people off.
So you mean like Stephen Moffat did with the War Doctor?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
Right,
I was
okay.
A bit jealous about that.
Stephen Moffat says there's going to be more to part episodes this year.
That is a canonical penis insertion, isn't it? That's where you stick your manhood in something already established and sort of say, hey, look what I've done. Can't do that.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Well, he did a few things like that, didn't he? He rebooted the Doctor's regeneration cycle as well, even though he didn't need to.
He had a cyber orgasm over that. Cyber
indeed.
Organism.
Yes, perhaps. So let us push on. I want to talk about two-parters. Because the Moffmeister says there's going to be more two-parters this year. I mean, we kind of already knew. We knew there's going to be at least two. There's even some people think there might be an entire run of six two-parters. What do you think?
No, I don't want that.
We don't?
No, you don't.
Why don't
Brian, you don't. You don't.
I don't. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're doing your business of subverting me. Right.
Yeah,
yes.
This is it.
I'm with James.
Absolutely. See,
totally.
It works.
That's bad.
But why?
It's bad to have more time with the story to get to know the characters, isn't it? That's just terrible. It's been proven time and time again.
Well, if I look at the episode, the stories of Doctor Who since it's come back that I have enjoyed, mm-hmm. none of them are in the two-parter selection.
None of them.
None of them.
Not
I love
even
Utopia,
the Empty Child.
The Girl Who Waited. If you like the Doctor's Wife. You know, I liked 42. The Bells of St. John. You know, none of them are two-parters.
What about,
they just don't seem
Utopia,
to work in this new
Utopia's
series format.
Beginning...
I understand totally what Brian thinks he's thinking, but he's wrong.
Utopia is the beginning of a three-parter.
A three-parter.
Yes.
No, yeah, I don't see Utopia as a three. No more than I see Planet of the Daleks and Frontier in Space being the same story. And people who do are just wishful thinkers.
Okay. Well, listen. What about The Empty Child?
Well, wait a minute now. That's different, Utopia, because the Master gets away at the end and his storyline continues within the next story. That story for Frontier in Space and Planet of the Daleks, they don't continue the Master's storyline. They just show the Daleks and things pick up from there. So the Utopia is connected because the Doctor still has to deal with stopping the threat.
But so is Frontier in Space and Planet of the Daleks, because Planet of the Daleks are directly behind what's going on in Frontier in Space. They are intrinsically linked. And one ducks out for the other. Utopia, while Utopia's thread reoccurs later on in The Last of the Time Lords, where you find out who the Toclafane are, I wouldn't say that's a three-parter story. I would say they're three. I'd say it's certainly one individual and then two, you could argue, are, because they carry the same story, the same plot line, the same characters. It's the same thing. But Utopia's utterly separate.
Okay, so Utopia has a cliffhanger, which continues in the following episode, which has a cliffhanger, yeah. which follows in the continuing episode. So
I mean, I agree with Brian. I know what he's saying. There is very strong links to it. But then I'd also say there's very strong links to Planet the Daleks, to Frontier in Space.
Okay, well, what about The Empty Child?
The Empty Child. I think The Empty Child is a very good episode. I think the Doctor Dances isn't so good. I will say it's not a bad one. But what I'm saying is that the ones I normally say as being my favourite episodes, very rarely are they two-parters. I think that would possibly be the only two-parter that springs to my head.
Springs
well, it didn't
to
spring
your
to my
head.
It sprung to your head, which launched upon my head, and then I launched it back at you guys as my idea. Yeah, that's possibly the only one. My point is that by and large, I don't like the two-parters. Even though I agree with Brian, I think the idea of the two-parter should work. And it would be a really good way. It's a good way to explore. But when I just think of them, they all disappoint me, really. So, no, I'm not really happy, because especially since I've not been overly happy with how they've treated Capaldi so far. I'm a bit worried. Do I want longer versions of Kill the Moon? No, I don't.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can agree with you on that.
Perhaps if there was a longer version of Kill the Moon,
need to be properly used.
Sorry, Brian, Christian? I was going
to
say, if there was a longer version of Kill the Moon, right, or the subsequent story, Forest of the Unfeasible Forest of the Night, perhaps whilst working on the two-part versions, they've therefore got more time to write them and produce them. At some point, someone's going to say, "Hang on, we need to rewrite this. It's shit."
Perhaps, Squire. Perhaps, but Squire? If not, if thus thrice forsooth does not work in that way, you've lost another episode.
James.
You've only got 13 episodes. As soon as you do a two-parter, you've now got 11 stories or 10 stories. Mm, so if it goes wrong, you sacrifice another potentially good one-parter.
James?
Or, yeah?
Have you been to the pub at lunchtime?
No, I've not.
Okay, just checking. Do carry on.
No, I'm not. I am eating noodles. Do you think that's it? Or is it the cranberry juice? They go together like oil and water.
I bet they do, yeah.
They do, trust me. I can tell you that. Not that I've had oil and water together in any way, apart from maybe an oily bath once, perhaps. And that was probably quite nice. I can't remember. But this is like oil and water in the bad way. No, I'm quite serious about the two-part. I mean, I agree with Brian so much in the sense that, you know, sometimes these stories feel too crushed. And I agree with you, Christian, that you know, kill the moon. You know, that you think if it was expanded a bit, they might be able to do something better with the idea than what came out. But at the same time, I just like, we get so few Doctor Who these days, you know, 13 in a year, if we're lucky. I don't, the two parters, it's not like 13 and one of those stories is two parts. It's like 13 and then you have your one parters and two parters. It's not much.
I don't care about the number of stories. I care about quality stories.
Well, that's it. But if the story isn't quality or isn't particularly interesting or doesn't particularly work and it's stretched over two, you lose that extra potential of having a time heist or, you know,
Mummy
another
on
good Doctor Who story.
Flatline.
Flatline. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So, I mean, it is a bit, I agree. It's a bit of a trade off. And I think what Brian said is probably the best point, really, is that theoretically it's a good idea. It's whether it actually pays off in the, you know, and it hasn't. And my concern is it hasn't so far. The two parts have not paid off. Okay. And I'm a bit worried about losing story threads to. But you did ask, so there
okay,
you go.
Yeah, I did ask. Okay. Listen, Stephen Moffat has also said in Doctor Who magazine that the BBC would do a Paternoster Gang spin-off, quote, in a heartbeat, unquote.
Yeah.
I personally find this a bit incredible. Brian, how would you feel about a Paternoster Gang spin-off?
I think you know how I feel. I've been very vocal about it before. I think that would be the biggest waste of the BBC money possible. And I find him to be a very wishful thinker that the BBC would jump on that in a heartbeat. I think really that's him trying to show that fans, or rather make the fans start an uproar for the ones that think they want this particular show. But I think it would be a poor idea. And I think his comment about not overusing a good idea or an idea, how did he put it? If you have an idea that's funny once, you can't keep using it. It just won't work anymore. So therefore, he doesn't feel like he should do that show. Well, then do me a favor. Stop bringing them back in Doctor Who, because it wasn't funny once, and then you brought them back like 15 times since. So yes, a TV show about them is a poor idea, and bringing them back in Doctor Who is an awful idea. You know, I think it's terrible. I think, yeah, that's just terrible.
Yes, I suspect.
As a matter of fact, now I'm a bit in fear of these two-parters, because I have a feeling he might bring them back and we might have more time with them. Which I don't know. Yes.
I suspect that this is not a sort of like the BBC would jump at it. I suspect he's gone to the BBC a few times with this and now he's turning to the fans.
Yes.
And sort of saying, hey, wouldn't it be a good idea? Show your support.
Yes, that's exactly what I think it is. I think it's a plea to the fans. Without him, you know, basically he's got one of the most massive egos in television right now. And, you know, I think it's his way of saying the BBC aren't biting. Why don't you guys help me out? But I won't ask you for your help, because I'll just tell you that you want this because my ego is that big. And then you'll go ahead and tell the BBC that you want this. And then they'll go, hey, guess what? Maybe you were right. And then I'll start making this crap television show for all of you.
Good Lord. You're on a bender today as well.
Oh, man. I those characters annoy the crap out of me, because, you know, Vastra is actually kind of a cool character. OK, mm-hmm. I think she works. I think she's interesting. I think Jenny is awful, and no offense to the actors or actresses here, period. It's all down to the writing and their characters. I don't like her character at all. I don't feel she's right, certainly for the era that her character comes from. And Strax single-handedly did what no other doctor could ever do. He defeated the Suntarans once and for all. Who's going to dig them out of the hole that Strax put them in? You know, hopefully one day some writer can repair the damage. But, you know, they used to be a good villain. I used to enjoy Suntaran stories. And now he's just the same joke over and over again. So, yeah, to me, they're a waste. And I know there'll be naysayers on here, because I know there are people that like them and unfortunately like the era that they came in. But, you know, I think that's an awful idea. And I hope that Moffat doesn't get his wish. I hope that that series never happens.
You see, the brilliant thing is that I don't really, I don't do much public stuff, so I can make these comments. I'm fairly safe. You go to conventions all the time. I'm just waiting for someone to come up to you in a convention and punch your eye, punch your punch your glasses out, and then just yeah. that's for Madame Vastra. Storm off.
Hey, but I said I liked Vastra. Why would they punch? No, probably because I said I liked her. You're right. Someone would be very upset about that.
Oh, yeah, very good. Nice turnaround. It's interesting with the ego thing. I mean, assuming that it is ego, and I'm going to actually play a little more of a gutless chicken and say I don't know him. Maybe it's not ego, but if it is ego, and there is ego involved, there, you can imagine it must be terribly frustrating that Russell T Davies had this plethora of multi-part segments to the franchise, and he can't get this one thing which I think he's been wanting for a time off the ground. You know, Torchwood, Sarah Jane Adventures. You know, it was all going in all sorts of directions, but he can't do it. So if it is ego, if Index File, if it's ego, that must really rub.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it must.
Yes. Well, let's not rub anyone's ego. See what I did there. Now, listen, we have a guest on this week's podcast in the old style kind of inserting a guest kind of way rather than joining us in our virtual studio. I spoke to Kenton Hall a few days ago. He's the writer and director of A Dozen Summers, which is about Maisie and Daisy McCormack, two ordinary 12-year-old girls trying to figure out why adults behave so oddly. The film, now Kenton's a Doctor Who fan, and the film features Colin Baker. And so I spoke to Kenton. Let's find out a bit about it. So, A Dozen Summers, it's a comedy film, mm-hmm. Is that right? And you've got Colin Baker, former Doctor Who Colin Baker, as the narrator.
That's right, yes.
The film itself, it's nothing to do with Doctor Who, is it? You just got the great advantage of having Colin Baker involved. So what's the actual idea behind the film?
The actual idea behind the film, I mean, in basic, it was, I've got two 13-year-old daughters, and when, as a rule, the stuff that I write tends to be more for adults, but I was kind of watching them like writers do, and it just seemed to me as though there wasn't really anything. I've had to be dragged to every single kid's film for the last 13 years, and most of the time you're just trying to claw your eyes out because they're so bad. But every so often something catches you. But I still realized that there was only kind of really two sort of types of films that they were going to see and for their age group. And one was the sort of fantasy film, which is great, and you know they love that, and I do. But then the other side of films weren't even really suitable for them was the kind of sort of warning that all 12-year-olds are on drugs that are going to steal your stuff and the whole younger generation is falling apart. And there didn't seem to be anything in the middle that kind of talked about how weird it was to be that age where you have your own opinions and you're forming the person that you're going to be, but you're still treated like a kid, but you're not a little kid anymore. And it just seemed like they were going through, and they had this whole kind of social kind of strata between them and their friends, this whole other world that they kind of existed in. And I wanted to kind of write something to kind of respect what they were actually going through and what their friends were going through, and hopefully something that would be funny for kids because they recognized it and felt like they were being taken seriously, but also funny for adults who could remember what it was like. And hopefully one of the big things for parents who are sort of being taken to see it as well, that it might make them think a little bit about how they treated their kids and how kind of sort of empathetic they were towards what it was like to be 12. But the biggest thing is that I find that, you know, comedy tackles serious subjects sometimes more effectively than drama because it saves it from being preachy. So the biggest thing was to kind of get a really fast, funny film that kids could kind of grab onto and own a little bit.
Okay. Now, you've written it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Have you also directed it?
I did, yes.
Okay, so you see, it's a very personal project.
I'm so tired.
So it's a very personal project.
Yeah, I think when you're working in independent film, I think personal projects are really the only ones you're going to survive because you have to want to tell that story so badly to go through what it takes to get the thing off the ground and get it paid for. It was a very personal project, and strangely, because it was such a departure, that I felt, you know, being the sarcastic writer that I was, this is actually a lot more personal to me than anything I've done before, which is interesting. I think it will affect kind of what I do in the future as well.
Now, it's an independent movie as well. Now, what have you previously done independent movies?
I work primarily as an actor. I have written and produced one other film that's also coming out this year, which I didn't direct. And that was very much the dark drama that I think you need to do when you're starting out to kind of prove your sort of gravitas. There's a Doctor Who word for you. And this felt, in terms of this being my, I've done shorts and I've acted in a lot of independent films, and I've occasionally cropped up in sort of more mainstream films as well. But this was kind of, it felt like it was something that wasn't being done, and you can't kind of force that kind of idea. You have to sort of stumble upon it accidentally. And it just so happened that I think the idea that was buzzing around my head and that I was sort of desperate to make was something that filled a little niche. And so we're fortunate in that. And I think, you know, from the response we've had from those people that have seen it in screeners and stuff, it seems to be that we've kind of tapped into something, at least for, you know, for the younger audience that wasn't massively there before. I'd say we're reinventing the wheel, but, you know, hopefully we've put some sparklers on it.
Okay. Now, as what I was getting at with it being an independent movie is obviously you're going to have a narrower distribution. So where would people who are interested in being going to see A Dozen Summers, where would they be able to see it?
Well, we are actually aiming for through our traditional distribution route at the moment. Okay. Talks are underway, and we hope that before the end of the year, certainly hopefully by about mid-2015, we'll have some news on theatrical and DVD release, as well as online video on demand, things that are sort of taken to the forefront. But we do, one of the great things about having sort of people like Colin and you and McIntosh in it is that it does get you a bit of notice from distributors. They will consider it seriously. But we're doing the festival circuit first, so we should start to announce festival dates where people can see the film very shortly.
Okay, that'll be interesting to see. Now, you've got Colin Baker in there. Now, is he in front of the camera, or is he purely a voice, based on the title?
I mean, he's a voice, but without giving too much away, he's interacting with the actors on screen. It's okay. Not quite the pure sort of voiceover that you'd expect from a narrator. It somewhat mangles the fourth wall. But weirdly enough is that I had a short list of people that, you know, in a million years I thought I couldn't get, and Colin was actually on the top of it just because he was my doctor, and I felt like being a Doctor Who fan, and there's quite a lot of Doctor Who Easter eggs in this movie, it felt like a good luck charm to sort of have one of the doctors playing the part, and it kind of slightly subverts the kind of serious narrator role as well. And I knew Colin was funny, and I knew Colin had that voice that would be perfect. It would, the conceit of the film required someone that felt like they were going to be the fantasy narrator, but someone who could turn that on a dime and turn it into sort of a comic piece with the lead children. And so Colin was always on the top of my list, and it was just a very, very fortunate series of events that led me to be able to actually kind of approach him professionally and send the script through. And he accepted it on the strength of the script, which was like really very relieving at that point going into production, that, you know, he must be sent a number of scripts from a number of people that go, I'm a fan, would you read this? And he just put us in touch with his agent and said, I'm really happy to do this, and came in, and it was just wonderful working with him. And we did get the chance to do some behind the scenes sort of film him actually working in the booth, and it was just amazing just to watch him. I kept having to remind myself to direct, because he just wanted to stand and sort of listen to him talk for hours. And he's very, very funny, very warm man to work with. And I think also, I think he's a very underrated actor, and I think, you know, it's I think as you're coming up, and I think it's happened with the people that have gone on to run the TV show now, it's you do want to work with those people that inspired you when you were younger, and Colin was one of those. So it kind of important to me that I found him something good to do, so it made me work twice as hard.
Okay. It's quite rare. Well, I've said rare is not the best word to use, but it is unusual to find someone who is a lover of the Sixth Doctor in that kind of a way. No disrespect to Colin, but based on, you know, the TV series as it was at the time, rather than what came later,
yeah,
Big Finish.
I mean, genuinely, while I hadn't suspended my critical faculties in terms of some of the problems that the show was going through at that time. I mean, I was 10 when Colin left, but I grew up in Canada, and so we had sort of PBS, like in the States, and various other channels that would run the classic series. The first episode I ever saw of Doctor Who was An Unearthly Child, because they started it from the beginning. But when I got to Colin, there was just something about his performance. I think the problem with fandom, that little section of fandom that Stephen Moffat talks about in Doctor Who magazine this month, is that there's a lot of received wisdom. I think there's a lot of people who've decided they don't like the Sixth Doctor, mm-hmm, because it's the sort of given opinion that this is what it was like. And so people repeat things. It's like you hear the same thing about certain writers and certain directors, and you realize that it can't possibly be of sort of formed individual opinion, because it's exactly the same thing you heard someone else say, right, or read on a forum post somewhere. And I think it's the same with Colin. I mean, yes, he's been given much, much stronger scripts with Big Finish, and I consume those with great pleasure. But I don't. He did a brave thing, like every actor that's taken on the Doctor. He went in and tried to make it his own. And while there may have been some tension in terms of how they were developing more sarcastic and slightly darker, although I hate the word, Doctor. The scripts weren't living up, but he was doing something very, very brave with the character. And that's what any actor playing the Doctor or any role has to do. When you go into any part, and I know this as an actor myself, it's always about, well, I can't replicate what anyone else has done, or I can't be like any other actor. I have to, within my talents, find something new to do with this part. And, you know, you saw it with Matt Smith after sort of following up David Tennant. It was just, you could see him just going, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just going to grab this with both hands and run. And I don't think Colin gets enough respect for taking on the part and throwing himself into taking it into a new direction, which was really an actor's only choice.
Yeah, couldn't disagree with that. Well, go on then. Let's talk briefly. Let's do one last question before I let you go.
Yeah.
What's your favourite Sixth Doctor story on TV?
Vengeance on Varus.
Okay.
I have perhaps slight issues with him being sarcastic over the acid bath, but I think, again, that was when you did have a writer that was actually taking the series seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin Tharlock's story as well. It's a tie between those two. They're the ones I probably go back to most often. But there's even this, the first four episodes of Trial are really strong. It's the overarching theme that I think doesn't work quite so well. But Vengeance, I think, is an example of a serious playwright going in and taking the show seriously, and everyone having something interesting to do and say. It's not perfect, but it's an episode that I can go back to time and time again and still find new things in it, which I think is, you know, always a sign of good Doctor Who.
Yeah. I kind of agree. I prefer Mind Warp to I do like Vengeance as well, but I do prefer Mind Warp to the first four episodes of Trial of the Time Lord.
Interesting. No, I can run with that. I can see the argument for that. Like I said, I think it's the expectation of the trial as an epic that falls apart. I think some of the individual stuff in it is actually really interesting.
Mm.
I mean, even Vervoids, you know, it looks very 80s, but there's some nice stuff going on in that
that's
as well.
Ideas,
but yeah, no, I will give you points for Mind Warp.
Oh, okay, well, Kenton, thanks for speaking to us, and all the best with A Dozen Summers, and let us know any future news you've got with that.
Of course, no. I mean, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me. I read the site every day, so it's as exciting to me to talk to you guys as anyone.
Good man. Okay. Thanks.
You're part
much.
Of my daily internet routine when I'm supposed to be writing.
Yeah, mine as well. okay. Thanks very much, Kevin. Thanks to Kenton there for taking the time to speak to us. It sounds an interesting film. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and I like the fact, or actually, I'm more curious at how he was able to get Colin Baker and so on. I mean, not that I don't think he should have. I'm just curious how you go about doing such a thing. But yeah, it sounds like an interesting idea.
Yeah,
and I'm curious to see Colin. Yeah, it's weird for me with Colin. I know him obviously from Doctor Who, and then I've seen him only in like BBV videos. I don't think I've seen him in much outside of Doctor Who. He's just one of those actors that I know has done other things, but when I catch British TV shows, I generally don't see him in them, and I don't know why that is, because I know he's done other things. I've seen his CV.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm curious to see more by him.
Actually, I'm surprised he hasn't done A Midsummer Murders, actually, Colin Baker.
Yeah.
Peter Davison has done one or two.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Okay. Well, we'll press on with this week's podcast. Before we... Brian's not going to appear in the rest of the podcast for daylight savings time reasons, dear listener. So before he goes, Brian, do you want to offer us a recommendation this week?
Sure. I've got a plethora of recommendations this week. I'm sorry?
One will do.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to decide. Oh, you know what? I'm going to go for... I just watched The Mind of Evil again.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I've been watching through a lot of Pertwee Hartnell and some Bakers, and it's funny because when I had this on VHS, you know, it was in black and white.
Yeah,
and you know they've colorized it. The first episode was hand colorized, the old technique way, and then the rest of the story was colorized with the chroma key, the chroma dots.
Yeah,
that were found on the black and white films. When I put this on, I had forgot that it was colorized, because in my head, I was so used to the black and white version.
Okay.
It looks so nice in color. And I know it's not like perfect because of the way that they had to restore it, but it looks so nice in color. And somehow it's such a weird way to say this, because, you know, I have no issue with black and white, but it kind of revitalized this story for me a little bit. It made me pay attention to more things that were going on in the story somehow, because I was really intently just staring at this screen, watching this in color. And I had to have watched it when it came out on DVD. I have no idea why I don't remember it being in color. But it's a great story. And even watching the special features and how they actually got a real missile to use within the story. I don't remember that at all. I think that's brilliant. They had a real missile on set. They had real military personnel guarding the missile in the scenes that it was appearing in. And the writer's wife appeared as one of the characters in the story, Chin Lee, I think is her name.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Right. Yeah,
can't recall the name now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There was just so many neat things about this story that I felt like I was rediscovering it all over again completely. It was always a good story, but somehow watching it on this DVD this time round, I was just really taken with it. So obviously Roger Delgado is always a treat to watch as the master, and John Pertwee's great. You know, put that combo together, you're always going to get a fun time, but The Mind of Evil is definitely a great time.
Is this the master's best story, do you think?
I don't know. He's damn good in it.
Yeah.
He's very... One thing that I liked was he's so in control of himself. Everybody's got this perception that the master is this insane, cackling villain, you know, just laughing for the sense of laughter, you know? But he's so sure of himself. He thinks he's brilliant. He thinks his plan is brilliant. He's very suave. He's almost like an evil James Bond in a way with the way he carries himself. He's so suave and sophisticated, you know, and he plays that so well in this story. And I think actually that's a version of the master that I would like to see come back. And I think we got it with, you know, the couple of minutes of screen time that Derek Jacobi was actually the master, not his Yana persona, but when he was actually the master, I think we got a bit of that there. And it's a shame that we didn't get to see more of that, because I think that's a side of the master that I completely miss. And maybe that's one of the things that makes it so fun to watch this story, is you get this villain that's just, he's just evil. You know, he's just doing these things just because he's evil. He legitimately wants to rule. He is not insane. He's not just crazy and killing people willy-nilly. He's got a plan, and he's following through with this plan. And I don't know. So it's a damn good one. If it's not his best, it's probably up there with his best.
Yeah, okay.
James? Tough to say when I'm on the spot, honestly. But, yeah, it's a really damn good
one. Any thoughts on that, James?
Mind of Evil is one of my favorite Pertwee ones, I think. So I can't find anything to disagree with there. I actually, although I will say, I think when I first, I remember seeing the bits in black and white on the VHS version and preferring it in the black and white, just because, again, you just take away all, you lose the depth issues of sets and stuff in black and white. It makes it harder to feel the stage, per se.
So, yeah, I mean, you just get to see a solid, well thought out master plot.
Yeah, that's a good one. Listen, funnily enough, after last week's podcast, hey, this is how well recommendations work, dear listener. I went and got a DVD of Ambassadors of Death.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, because previously I just had a my old VHS version. No, I didn't. No, what did I? I've got it twice basically, because I had the preview disc from the BBC, so I've actually bought a copy of it now, so I can sit it there. Because the thing is, when you get these preview discs, they don't come in a case, dear listener. They just come in a paper envelope. So you basically, your Doctor Who collection looks incomplete, even if it is actually complete. So rather than go to the trouble of buying a new case and then downloading some custom artwork for it, I saved money and bought it for like £6 from Amazon. So that was a good deal for me, basically. So yeah, recommendations work. So we're joined with us, dear listener, in saying goodbye to Brian Turnover this week.
Bye. Thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to my recommendation and stuff. No, it's cool. I will be here next week. Sorry about the time delay. And guys, have fun.
Not a problem, Brian. See you next week, mate. He's gone there. He's gone. So, James, do you have a recommendation or shall I go first? Some of you may be enthralled by this. Others may be less so. I've been watching Game of Thrones.
Oh, dear.
It's just like I can read you like a book these days. We've been doing this too long. I've been thoroughly enjoying it. There's lots of good stuff in there. But what I... Basically, when I first started watching it, I noticed a couple of Doctor Who people. I'm halfway through the second series so far, so there are Doctor Who people that I haven't yet encountered. But I have been researching this, because I was kind of surprised there hasn't been more Doctor Who people in there, to be honest. I mean, we were talking about Colin Baker earlier. I mean, this would be a perfect thing for Colin Baker to be in, really. There are a lot of Doctor Who people in there. There is Julian Glover, plays a key character through the first series. He's obviously City of Death and that other classic series.
Cloud Crusaders.
The Crusaders, thank you. And Liam Cunningham, who was the sub-captain in Cold War. He's in there as well, as is Tobias Menzies, who was also in Cold War. Ian Glenn was the one that first alerted me to the fact that there could be Doctor Who people in Game of Thrones. Ian Glenn played the one of the soldiers who aren't actually soldiers, from the Silence. Thank you. And Harry Lloyd as well, who plays a... He was in Human Nature and Family of Blood. He was Baines in that. He plays a, if possible, even more insane, power mad character in Game of Thrones. And there's a few others, a few weird ones as well. There's Ian Hanmore from Tooth and Claw, who's that bald Scottish kung fu man. And there's also Finn Jones, who played Santiago Jones in Sarah Jane Adventures, Death to the Doctor. He's Joe Grant's grandson. Mark Gatiss as well, David Bradley, Thomas Sangster, who's now Thomas Brodie Sangster, again Human Nature, Bern Gorman as well, Diana Rigg, and I think Joe Dempsey, who most people probably wouldn't recognise. He's in Game of Thrones, he's one of the bastard sons of King Robert Baratheon. but he in Doctor Who he was in The Doctor's Daughter, which is why no one would recognise him from Doctor Who, because no one really remembers The Doctor's Daughter.
No one wants to, particularly.
Well, I didn't want to say that. What that's all about. So yeah, watching Game of Thrones, lots of... what's interesting about it as well, I found, is that it tends to centre on the kind of medieval political aspect of things, whereas the more fantastical elements, like dragons and zombies, are kept to the peripherals, which is... I don't know if... I haven't read the books, so I don't know if it's the same in the books, but I think that's a very interesting approach for a TV show.
Yeah.
Based on that subject matter, to kind of play down those aspects. Have you watched Game of Thrones at all?
I never have. The nearest I got to it was briefly meeting Jason Momoa, who is now going to be the new Aquaman. Lucky
right.
him.
Right.
At a Milton Keynes.
Okay.
And he was disgustingly cool.
Okay. There is one other link as well with Doctor Who, and that is the chap who is Jenna Coleman's boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Is one of the main characters in Game of Thrones so far. Because as someone pointed out to me, if you have a favourite character in Game of Thrones, they die. So.
Well, as I say, having not seen it at all.
It's good fun. It's good fun. And there's a lot of nudity in there as well. So.
I see.
Amazon.com. Anyway. So your own recommendation, Jen. Oh, before we do press on, if you haven't read The Forgotten Son yet, and it is on your one-to-read list by Andy Frankham, Alan, this is the Colonel Lethbridge-Stewart series opener. Do so, because it is really, really very good. And I'm in it as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. So, there you go. So that was a surprise. So I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but that was nice. So thank you, Andy. So any recommendation from you, young man?
I've started rewatching Ripper Street from the start.
Oh, right. Oh, Jerome Flynn's in Game of Thrones as well, by the way.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he's really good in it.
Yeah, which again is just slightly interesting because we talked about Ripper Street Series 3
mm-hmm.
long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the first one to see how it's changed or how it differs. And you can feel it's still slightly embryonic in its first episode. But still a very strong series. And in a funny way, it's possibly one of the reasons we talk about the sort of Paternostra stuff. Why I have no interest in it is that... You know, I've got something set in that period, which I think is very, very strong. And I think maybe that, in a sense, makes the whole Doctor Who variant seem derivative almost.
Hmm.
Or will feel derivative compared to the sort of very elegant and thoughtful way that the Ripper Streets, although you wouldn't guess it from the name, I suppose, is put together. Hmm. It wouldn't compare, even though it wouldn't be obviously doing the same thing, but you wouldn't help but compare.
Have you watched the Copper yet?
No, I haven't.
Because that's got a similar setting. So that's kind of on my when Kerry and I are kind of wanting to watch Ripper Street again, we're kind of going to go and have a look at Copper, see how that turned out.
I watched the first season. I'm running behind on this. Of Whitechapel about a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
which I enjoyed. So I'm hoping to try and eventually grab the other few series that have come out since. I didn't even realise that it was an ongoing series. I watched the first series thinking it was just a one-off miniseries.
Right.
And then was thinking at the end, you know, you could probably spin this off and do more. You know, these characters work kind of well. And at the end, oh, they preempted me on
they
that
did.
And actually had the plan to do that in the first place. Okay, fine. I've been enjoying that. So not so much Doctor Who this week. I was sort of watching the features of Ambassadors of Death, obviously, as we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Which again, as I say, is fairly interesting.
Hmm. I was going to say, just going back to the Paternoster Gang and Ripper Street. The thing about Paternoster Gang is that there's already a very good Doctor Who universe story that you can set in Victorian times.
You're talking Jake,
Captain Jack.
Oh, Captain Jack, right.
Captain Jack in the original Torchwood. Original time-wise Torchwood. You know, which we see him in one of those where was it? Was it in which series did we see him in there? Was it in series 2? Was it in series 3 or series 4? But either way, we see him in a Victorian Torchwood with those run by those two women.
Yeah.
And that's a far more interesting idea than the Paternoster gang, frankly.
Well, yeah, Paternoster is a bit of a pastiche. Most things are, obviously, but of too many things which are already too current. I mean, with Sherlock Holmes being so current as well at the moment, and while Sherlock isn't of the era, it is of the theme. It just feels, again, it feels like even, as Brian said, no disrespect to the actors, cast, crew, or even writer, it just feels a little too derivative of things which were already happening at the moment and being done very well. You've got to say, I could understand why the BBC might be looking around and sort of saying, why do we need this?
Yeah. Yeah.
What does it really serve that Doctor Who, Sherlock, Ripper Streets, and all the other multitude of shows isn't already doing? Is it really got something new? I mean, I'm kind of... It's funny, isn't it? I mean, Torchwood is sort of like a relationship which goes sour. But every now and then, when you're feeling really low, you just want to go back to it and just see if it's, you know, why it didn't work. Maybe it'd be better this time. It never is, so you leave it again. Sort of feeling that with Torchwood. I think, yeah, I could cope with just seeing having another bash at Torchwood and see if that works. Of course, it probably wouldn't. But yeah, Victorian Torchwood would be quite interesting.
Mm. Do we know when Ripper Street's going to be on BBC yet? Have they announced that?
I'm not sure. I'm aware. I mean, I've heard that Musketeers...
Because that's part of the deal, isn't it? So.
Yes, yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see how it will fare in its edited... edited format.
What have you heard about Musketeers?
Musketeers, I think, is pretty much confirmed as a renewal.
Oh, well, that's good.
Which was a surprise in the sense I don't think its ratings have been very good, but I believe it is worldwide produced, BBC Worldwide and BBC America. But the BBC Worldwide means the focus, obviously, is on global distribution rather than a channel rating.
Yeah.
And I believe it's sold to, at the moment, it's selling well to a multitude of countries. Okay. So, again, from a production point of view, if you're interested in productions, it's quite interesting, obviously, depending on who is producing it, as to where the focus is, and BBC Worldwide. And this is, again, while, as we've said before, while recently, I'm sure I heard that BBC Worldwide was directly involved in the commissioning of Doctor Who, why Doctor Who is in fairly safe hands, because they work on a global distribution rather than on a rating, on a channel rating. So, again, it's very interesting things going on about who produces at the BBC to what effect it has, because Ripper Street wasn't done by BBC Worldwide. So when it came to the crunch, it was looked on for its ratings on BBC One versus ITV. It's all very interesting stuff, which all dovetails into each other in how the whole thing works. When is Doctor Who? Is Doctor Who autumn scheduled this year?
It's probably going to be autumn schedule, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they have some sort of disaster. Let's hope.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's just, we'll have to hurry up if otherwise. We didn't talk about Jenna Coleman.
What about Jenna Coleman?
Did you talk about that last week?
What about her?
About her staying on. Oh, you know, with Moffat saying that she was actually...
Oh, no, we didn't talk about that. No, we didn't talk about that.
So I just thought that's kind of interesting because we as a podcast, talked about that a couple of times about the whole issue.
Yes.
And it was interesting to see that what we all said was sort of pretty much validated by what he said.
I think so, yeah. There's actually an article coming on Castoris later today or tomorrow, so it'll be live by the time you hear this, dear listener, in which we investigate the theory or rumour of there being two companions in this series, which, you know, it is purely a rumour, but it's one that keeps coming back. Much like, I suppose... The rumour of Charles Dance playing the Master last year.
The Rani, surely.
it's the only way forward for the Rani now, isn't it? Obviously, yeah, she has to have a sex change.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to be played by a man now.
Yeah, yeah.
James Corden.
Yeah. See how that goes down.
Where's Corden? But, you know, so, yeah, I think that was interesting. It's interesting if you're interested in looking at how television works and how productions work. If you watch, as we talked about at the time, the Christmas special, and even to a certain degree, you can watch the last episode of the series, where you can see these markers of where there potentially are alternate versions, or where things feel like they're shifting in different directions, which are either unnatural or subjective. I think it is very interesting. I can't even remember what the Christmas episode was called, the Santa one.
Last Christmas.
I mean, now it would just be very interesting to hear what the alternate was, how it would have alternately ended, although, as I say, at the time, did have some suspicions. But yeah, so no, I think that's very interesting news that she was actually going to go, and how
twice.
That worked out twice. Yes, I mean, someone said in our comments to the article that we had up, how can this work with contracts and everything? But again, as far as I'm aware, it's always done by the year. It's not done. This assumption that people have that it's an American system where it's done over, you know, set contracts for a set period of years.
Hmm.
Once she's done the year, it's still negotiable, and if they're half interested in having her or whatever, I'm sure there's certain flexibilities in there, if they're willing to be flexible.
Yeah.
It sounds like Moffat was willing to be flexible on it, that for whatever reason, whatever the logic was behind the scenes. But yeah, very interesting.
Indeed. There's probably just one other thing to talk about. It's been a bit of an impersonators week on in Doctor Who News. We've got the Tim Trelaw Third Doctor Adventures.
Oh, yes.
Big Finish. Big Finish, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, Tim Trelaw reads the stories, and then there's voices by Katie Manning and Richard Franklin, and Tim Trelaw reading the part of the Third Doctor as well as narrating it. So that's kind of an interesting get-out that Big Finish have got there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they have any small people in their recording studio. As we do, but there's also the new Ark in Space audio book, which is going to be read by John Culshaw.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? So, I don't know why they couldn't have got Tom Baker. I'm not going to speculate on John Guiler at all, because he's a busy man. But it seems quite strange. I'm interested in it possibly more than I would have been, to be honest with it. Obviously knowing the story of the Ark in Space and wanting to hear how it turns out with John Culshaw, who's famous for doing an impersonation of the Fourth Doctor on the Dead Ringer show.
Yeah, I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it? Especially, I don't know. It is kind of staggering, given that Tucker is now in the Big Finish ranks, and so you've got someone impersonating him in the same...
It's a BBC audiobook, but as we know, the ties between BBC's audiobooks and Big Finish are very close now.
So presumably it must be, is it a contract? I don't know. You could speculate, couldn't you? But there is a sort of weird meta thing going on, isn't there, where you'd be listening to it for the wrong reasons in a weird way. You'd be listening to it because you're looking at, that's bizarre. But saying that, I mean, they can work. I mean, I listen to... As we know, you listen to the First Doctor stuff, and often you'll have William Russell doing the First Doctor. And his First Doctor, while he's got the essence of the First Doctor, he's not like John Guiler. He's not impersonating.
No.
The First Doctor. But you get, once you've listened to a couple of them, you get used to his version of the Doctor being the Doctor. If that's to make sense, if you have that constant consistency in the impersonation, that can work. So you don't actually have to have an actor that mimics John Pertwee perfectly, but as long as what they do remains consistent and faithful to the sort to that character, you can stray away from the tonal differences, I think. That said, being said, Michael Troughton and Fraser Hines do great Patrick Troughtons. So, you know, it can be kind of good as well when you get someone who can do it spot on, as John Guiler can do. And sort of hopefully the audience can just forget the fact that they're not listening to the original, you might say.
It's interesting stuff how it's developing in that area. Okay, well, do you know what? I believe that this brings us to the end of this week's Castover's podcast with a K. No, I just believe.
I foresee it is soon to end.
Yes, it is.
Like all things.
as all things must, in order for them to begin again at some point. Yes. You've probably made that link a bit longer than it needed to be.
The ring? I don't know. I was just thinking of the Ring of Mordor.
Right. If you've learned anything from
We
this
used to
week's
think about the ring a
podcast.
lot. You know, 10 years ago, everyone was talking about that ring. Now it's forgotten, like in the films, in the books.
Yes,
It's
it's a
returned to the
strange parallel, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry, what were you saying?
Well, I was just going to say that, dear listener, you've probably learned a few things from this week's podcast with a K, namely that noodles and cranberry juice don't go together. Otherwise, you start babbling incoherently like James has for much of this week's podcast.
How rude.
Okay.
I think my babblings were actually quite coherent, actually. I was babbling coherently. If I was babbling
Okay.
incoherently, I'd be talking normally. So I was.
So, as I say, that does bring us to the end of this week's Castover's podcast with a K. Thank you for listening, tuning in, downloading, streaming, absorbing us in whatever media consumption method you prefer. We'll be back next time.
Good, isn't it?